I want to thank all of you for being here tonight, and I want to welcome our very special guest tonight to the podium. He's got a great pitch, I'm sure. Let's welcome Eric from Santa Barbara, huh?
Thank you guys for having me out, Eric Alcoholic. Sorry for being late. We pushed the envelope and hit like every single red light on the way here. But I guess I'll start from the beginning. Yeah, my sobriety date is January 28th, 2014. This is not my first sobriety date. It wasn't my second, wasn't my third. And a big part of that is, when I got here, I thought that I was smarter, better than this disease, and that I didn't need help, and I didn't need to follow your guys' direction. But I knew I needed something. I couldn't follow the simple rules, the 12 steps. I just couldn't put myself through it. And thought I could beat this thing on my own. But a little bit of background. I came from a decent family. I wanted for nothing. A little middle class family in Santa Barbara, and I was a good kid. I got diagnosed with a learning disability in the first grade, and I remember the moment, I was in the dining room, and I was doing homework with my dad, and my mom was in the other room, and I was so frustrated. I was like, I don't understand why these kids can read better than I can, and I don't understand why it's so hard for me. And, that ism, or that feeling of being different from everyone else, and, who knows how much of it was just in my head and how much of it was actuality. And I went into my room, the other room, and I frustrated, slammed my homework down. Mind you, I'm like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old, And I'm like, Mom, I don't get it. Why do the other kids get it and I don't? Why is it so much easier for them? And she had me tested for a learning disability, and I ended up being colorblind and dyslexic. And just immediately felt different from my peers. And that plays a role in... because I just immediately just threw myself into school. I was determined to prove to the world that I was as smart as they were. And the school system, it was like in the 90s, and the school system didn't know what to do with kids that were dyslexic. And they put me in this class called Resource, and I couldn't stand it. I was like, to be completely, politically incorrect, but I was like, my thinking was, I'm not retarded, and so I shouldn't be in here. And I went as hard as I could to learn as much as I could, and what ended up happening was I surpassed everyone in my class. And I ended up testing out a Resource, and I ended up, burning through high school and junior high and doing really well, and I ended up graduating high school early. And I think it's important about that part of my story is it developed this mentality that I can overcome something, and I can beat this on my own, and that I am stronger than this. And so what ended up happening was I ended up going all through high school and never drinking, never smoking, never partying, and graduating high school early, going to Santa Barbara City College and finishing there and transferring to San Diego State. And I was 19 years old and I was a junior, and I moved into the dorms at San Diego State. And I don't know if you guys know San Diego State. It's like, it's not really that big of a party school. And my wrestling team captain was the president of Kappa Alpha, a fraternity that was like right across the street. And like, just to give you an idea, me growing up, alcoholic, obsessive, overachiever to the core, sports, I would pour myself into sports. Like, I was on the football team and in marching band. So I remember a weird, abnormally weird kid, like a nerd, part of the chess club and a jock, and just a weird individual. I really didn't fit in, but tried to fit in everywhere. Never had my own identity, and I get to San Diego State and I start dabbling with alcohol, and I started partying, and I was there for as a criminal justice major. I had my entire life planned out. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, what I was going to do, and when I was going to retire. My whole path was I wanted to go to San Diego State. I was dating this one girl. Her father was the director of the Department of Homeland Security program at San Diego State. And I wanted to work for the U.S. State Department as a regional security officer and work for U.S. foreign embassies and run security for U.S. foreign embassies. I mean, mind you, this is like an 18, 19-year-old kid thinking, like, this is what I want to do. And I ended up, I wanted to do that for, like, 20 years, retire, then move back to the United States, do something over here. You know, I'd probably be in my 40s, pump a few kids out. I had this whole thing planned out. And I started to party, and it started with just alcohol, and it's appropriate. I mean, and Santa Maria, do you guys have drugs here in Santa Maria?
Okay.
Thank God. So I started drinking. My new criminal justice major, so I didn't want to dabble in drugs, and like my roommate smoked pot, and like. So he'd go and smoke, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I can't do that, because, like, I got to do, like, a background check and, like, lie detector or something, and it took him approximately, like, 5 to 6 months to, you know, to turn me out to smoking some weed, and again, just that whole obsessive thinking. I started smoking weed, and I had a bunch of money saved up, and so the first sack of weed I bought was an ounce. And I started selling the weed, and I realized, like, I just paid for my habit, or I just paid for the bag of weed with selling a little bit to some other kids in the dorms. And so just naturally, I went from partying and drinking to trying marijuana to selling marijuana. And then that progressed, just that progression occurs throughout the rest of my story for every substance that I discovered from then on out. But I ended up getting through San Diego State, good student when I got there, started drinking, started, like, not going to class. Like, the second semester I was there, the first semester I had, like, you know, 16 units and, like, a gnarly, you know, regimen of classes. And the second semester I had class on Tuesday. So I had, you know, my weekend started Wednesday and ended Monday night, and then school was Tuesday. So, like, I had the whole week to party, and I took off just running, and I felt like I earned it. I felt like I worked so hard in high school, and all the other kids were fucking off and screwing around, and I was doing all this hard work, and I deserved this little bit of R&R and partying. And by the time I was I was a graduating senior. And it was like a public administration class, and there was this one paper that was the entire assignment for this entire class. And I had the entire semester to do it, and I hadn't touched it. I had not done anything. I hadn't touched it. Just procrastinated, you know, didn't do it, just partied the whole time. And, like, the last class I show up, and you know, I'm walking out of the class, and the teacher grabs me and goes, Eric, what are you doing? You're a graduating senior. You didn't turn in, like, the paper for the class. And I was like, oh, it's not done yet. I need, like, a couple more days. And she's like, okay, take your couple more days and turn it in. So I waited, like, 2 days to start it. And then the night before, like, I was, like, absolutely had to be turned in. I went and I got, like, an 8-ball of Coke, a bunch of Adderall, and a bunch of Ritalin, and was in the library with, like, lines cut out on the table. And I wrote this, like, 23-page research paper with citation, research, and all of that. I don't know if it made sense. I didn't read it or proofread it. I just typed it up and went and turned it in. And she gave me, like, a C-, like, the lowest that she could give me possible without failing me, because she's like, just get out of here. So just, you know, I was like, falling apart. I was a hot mess, and, at this point in time, I'd gotten in a motorcycle accident. I've been riding dirt bikes my entire life, and I got in this motorcycle accident. And you know, at this point, I've dabbled with a little bit of weed and coke and some alcohol, and I injured my back. And this doctor prescribed me Oxycontins, and I didn't know what they were. I took one and I threw up, and when I threw up, it hurt my back more than, you know, actually taking the pills helped. But I was on some weird, janky insurance through the college, and so it was like this online prescription, and so they just kept sending me the prescription. And I was supposed to take 4 80 milligram Oxycontins a day, and so they would send me 120 120 Oxys a month. And, you know, I always grew up that you don't throw your prescriptions away, so I'd just put them in my medicine cabinet. And one day that roommate that introduced me to smoking weed comes over to my house, and he'd gone down his own path, and he goes to my bathroom, and he comes walking out holding this thing of Oxycontin. He goes, "What do we have here?" And I was like, "Oh, it's just my pain meds. I don't take them." And so he introduced me to, you know, "Well, you took one and you got sick. Well, it's a little too strong for you. We got to build your tolerance up." And so he introduced me to, you know, snorting them and smoking Waff foil. And smoking it off foil, I always thought it was like if an alien was to come down and like experience, you know, humans for the first time and walked in on someone smoking anything off of foil, they would like open the door and be like, "This is not okay." Yeah. Like, what is going on here? But I ended up falling in love with Oxycontin. And kept getting that prescription for a while. And the doctors finally said, you know, it's time to get off of it. And I was like, "No!" Mind you, still thinking I'm a criminal justice major. Like, I remember I had this moment where, like, I had this book that said Careers in Criminal Justice. And I had, like, a blunt with a bunch of weed in it, some cocaine, some crushed up pills on it. And I was like looking at the book and I was like, "Oh, this is a funny picture," and took a picture of my phone. Like, you know, I'm just falling apart. Like, why am I even going to college? Like, you're going to college to work in this field and then you're just blowing it, selling drugs and just living this off life. And I ended up coming home. After graduation, I had no money and I ended up, you know, moving home and, you know, getting a job, like just retail job working at Radio Shack. And I was also like, you know, doing this thing for IT and, you know, babysitting like adults with computers and, making good money, like, you know, good, decent money. I was able to put the pills down for a while and just drink, and just drink, like drinking a ton. And, you know, the big thing for me was like, it took me a while to admit that I had a problem with alcohol. I, you know, ultimately I felt like my problem was with opiates, and but every single time that I would relapse, my relapse would come from me starting with alcohol. I'd think I would drink a beer, and I could just have a beer, and I would get away with it. I'd drink a beer and then like get away with it, and then I could drink just a beer and get away with it again, and then like I'd drink a beer, and then all of a sudden like I'm shooting speed, and like, what the fuck happened? Just like that, just the transition happened. So, how much time do I have? I go till 8:15.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You know, so I'm still super young, and I'm still partying, and I'm still kind of writing it off as like, you know, just you're having fun and partying and getting it out of my system. Like, I started late. You guys all started early, so I have the right to keep partying. And so just basically working for the weekend, I'd get a paycheck and go blow the whole paycheck, not saving any money. You know, falling apart where like my boss I'd walk into work and my boss would be like, "Go home." You're like, "What's wrong with you?" Like, you know, just looking horrible. And so then at one point in time, I put the Oxycontins down and was just drinking. And about a year after I came back, I had a coworker introduce me to Oxycontin again. He's like, "Hey, you ever done these before?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, I remember that. Like, let's do it." Smoked off the foil. And, you know, the important part about, you know, I think about this part of my story was like, I never thought that I would ever do heroin. You know, like heroin was like this horrible drug. And, you know, at this point it was just like a little bit of cocaine, drinking, and, pills. Yeah. Improper ingestion of pills, but pills. And, he pulls out some heroin, and I started smoking heroin. And same thing, I started selling it, and just quickly progressed. I got introduced to methamphetamines, and then so ultimately my true love, was mixing heroin and methamphetamines together. And basically just, it took me out really quickly. I went from having a job, having a place to live, to being homeless in my hometown, and it was rough. It was like my life was falling apart, and I still didn't think that my life was unmanageable. I still didn't think, I still think the thought that I was somewhat functional and that the world was out to get me. And I ended up, in county jail. I got a DUI for driving under the influence of heroin. Then I got in a car chase downtown Santa Barbara at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I got away. It's actually an interesting story. I got away, and which I didn't think happened either. It was just like I took off on foot, and the only reason I got away is because the description of me was a Hispanic male, and I walked right past the police, and they had I ditched my car, and I walked right past them, and they were looking for a Hispanic male, and I was not a Hispanic male. It's like, hi. I was like ghostly white too, because like I spent most of my time in a garage that wasn't my own garage. It was like someone's garage, and I was like a creature of the night at that point in time. But so basically, I living on the streets, living on people's couches, and living in just horrible conditions, like finding abandoned houses to crash in when I was like no longer welcome in a spot that I was at. Sleeping in people's cars. I remember breaking into cars when it was so cold. You're not prepared for the elements while you're out there. You're not buying yourself like a nice North Face jacket to go sleep outside. All of my money was shunted towards feeding my addiction, and I ended up becoming a criminal. I ended up becoming a thief. I ended up burglarizing houses. I ended up doing they called it a home invasion, but it was like a residential burglaries. And I stopped being able to recognize Eric. I didn't know who he was. It was just this person that just developed over a short period of time. Like when you really think about it, like right now I'm 4 years sober, and starting at 19, I got sober at 26. So in those 7 years, my life just fell apart. It fell apart fast. And like I hear some of these guys say, like, I drank for 30 years and I got loaded for 30 years. And I'm like, how the fuck did you do that? Like 30 years of that. Like it was rough. And they weren't doing exactly. And I hit a point where I was like, I remember I would write in the journal, because like you don't have Netflix when you're out there running around sleeping in people's cars and stuff. So like I would like have a journal, and I wrote in this journal, and I remember talking, like saying, like, Eric, you're a junkie. Like you are a junkie. You are just this. You're a slave. Your soul is a slave to this thing, because I couldn't live without it. I couldn't, I could not stop. I could not live without it. And So real quick, kind of jump back a little bit in time, but my family kind of found out about me shooting heroin and doing all this stuff. My little brother asked me, he's like, why? Why do you, it didn't compute to them. Like my whole family's all normal. They drink, and I'm like the black sheep in the family. And he's like, why do you do it? And my God honest response, the only thing I could think of, the only like logical thing to tell him was that, honestly, it gave me something to look forward to when I woke up in the morning, especially like if I had something in the morning. And I could relate that to, when you're waking up so hungover and you reach down and you grab the bottle and there's that little bit of alcohol, or you know, you go and you open up your little baggie and you're like, holy shit, how did you survive the night, you know? And it gave me something to look forward to in the morning. And if I didn't have it, I knew what my day was going to be like because I was heading that direction. And it was I was going to get it, and I was going to do whatever it took to get it. And so basically, my life had fallen apart. Like, I lost all of my friends. The friends that I had were like, you know, the name like Spooky or Creeper or, you know, Criminal and Felon. And yeah, it's like, there's some really stand-up guys, but you know, they weren't there to go to bat for me when I needed it. And just I no longer recognized the guy in the mirror, and I was ready to just throw in the towel. I had no concept of a God, and if there was a God, I was upset with him because he had a sick sense of humor. And this is like the God shot in my story, because I was ready to throw in the towel. And the concept of like me dying, and like that sound when the TV goes dead, like that beep, like just nothingness, was more desirable than my current existence. It just like, just please end it. Even if it was nothingness, even if it was just my existence stopped, and then that meant all of this stops, that sounds better than where I'm at now. You know, probably because I was super dope sick at the time too, and like just tired of the same rat race, the same insanity, the same waking up. And I ended up having like a lethal dose of opiates, and I was up on a certain part of town overlooking the beach, and I was ready to just, you know, do the lethal dose and jump off the cliff and call it a day. And it happened to have been, it was Mother's Day, and I'm sitting there, and this lady drives by, and mind you, I'm like 125 pounds, like face looking horrible, raccoon eyes, black hoodie, just a dark essence or aura around me, and like people would see me and be like, and this lady drives by and she's staring at me, and like I remember sitting there and like looking at her like, what? Like what are you staring at? Like, I was so tough. I mean, I'd blow away if the wind was too strong. And she turns around, she flips her car around, and she pulls up, and she reaches up onto her rearview mirror and she pulls out a St. Christopher and she hands it to me, and she says, "It looks like you need this more than I do. God bless. Take care of yourself." And at that moment, I was like, ugh. Like, you know, like that feeling when you're sitting on your, like you're in one of these meetings and you got a speaker and you're like, when is this dude gonna shut up? And like, you're sitting on the foot and like, all of a sudden you get up to like pray out and your foot's all tingly. Like, that feeling hit me from head to toe. And I like had a panic attack. I was like, I need a Xanax. I was like, no. I had a panic attack. I freaked out because in that moment, that woman reached out with that St. Christopher. She didn't try to preach to me. She didn't try to, you know, say, get in the car, we're going to take you out. She just showed me that little bit of love, that little bit. She reached out and touched me. And like, still to this day, that woman is the closest person to an angel to me, because I was ready. I was prepared. I was serious about exiting this, you know, stage left. I'm out. See you later, guys. This existence is not for me. And I was ready to concede. And, I did something that I would have never have done. I got rid of that entire dose. Like, I would have just, you know, dosed that thing out for the next day or two and called it a day. But I got rid of that dose. I called my mom on Mother's Day. I said, "Mom, I love you. Happy Mother's Day. I need help. Take me to rehab." And I ended up going to, she ended up coming picking me up. She hadn't heard from me in 9 months. The last she heard from me was when the detectives were showed up at her front door. After that whole car chase that I got away from, because my car was registered to her address because I had no address. And she picked me up, and I went to detox. And my story would be a perfect story if it if I just ended it right there and I stayed sober for the rest of my life. But the problem with that is I couldn't surrender to this thing. I thought that I was stronger than that. But the good part about this is it exposed me to you guys. It exposed me to the fellowship. It exposed me to AA. And I ended up going to Salvation Army ARC. I was there for 5.5 months. And, you know, did well at the ARC. And I got kicked out for having too many neckties because I was working behind the desk. And I had a cocky attitude. And I would slip through the cracks of all their little rules. They wouldn't catch me on anything. And so they went through my locker and they found something where I had made a mistake. And because they knew I was doing stuff that I wasn't supposed to be doing. And they ended up kicking me out. But I got, that was my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sat through these meetings. I sat through, they didn't really make you do the steps at the ARC. We had to get a sponsor, but they didn't really push us to go through the steps. And so I drug my feet when I first got here. And again, I thought that I could beat this thing on my own. I thought that I was stronger than this. I thought I was smarter than this disease. And I ended up coming back to Santa Barbara. And this is my insane thinking here, right? So my problem was heroin, right? So I said to myself, if I just smoke speed, everything would be okay. And I gave it a good old college try. And I started smoking speed and everything was not okay. In a matter of like 5 months of being back in town, I got picked up. I was walking across town with a sawed-off shotgun. Don't ask me why I had the sawed-off shotgun, but I got stopped by the police and ended up going to county jail. And they hadn't caught up to me for that whole car chase either, so they got upset when they finally found me. And I did some time in county jail. I should have done way more time than actually. I did 240 days in county jail, and I got out to do a drug diversion program, Prop 36, with Marcel Myers and Project Recovery. And I ended up completing Project Recovery, and I did what the judge told me to do. I did the bare minimum in order to satisfy the courts, in order to get off probation, to get my charges dropped. Said yes, sir, no, ma'am, yes, okay, yes, let's do this. And I followed their little rules, and they said, okay, Eric, you're off drug testing, your graduation's in November. And I was going to meetings, I was sitting through the meetings, but I wasn't listening still. And I still thought I could beat this thing, and I still wasn't willing to work the steps. I still wasn't willing to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor that I knew wasn't going to make me do anything that I needed to do. And, my sponsor was in the bathroom at the Alano Club smoking crack. He's that's my guy. And, just because the courts wanted me to have a sponsor. The courts wanted me to. So I did everything to get the courts off of my back. And I went through graduation at Project Recovery graduation. And I ended up getting loaded, like the minute the graduation was over, I went to go pick up. And did it all over again. But this time it went by faster. I was 4 months or 4 or 5 months I was out. Mind you, at this point in time, I was healthy, like about my size now. And within 4 or 5 months, I was 138 pounds checking back into the Santa Barbara County jail. And by this time, the sheriffs are all getting to know me. The COs are getting to know me by first name or last name. And I had a moment of clarity in there. I was sitting there, I was talking to this dude, and he was talking about how he'd just gotten released, and that they save a bed for him, kind of joking around. And I saw myself in him. I was like holy shit. And like, that's me. That's me like 20 or 30 years, however old he was, 20 or 30 years from now, that's me. You know, mind you, I'm 26 years old, and I would like to think I had a good head on my shoulders, but I didn't. I had no idea what this thing was and how bad that this disease had me, and that I couldn't beat this on my own. And so I did a couple months in county. I went in there with like 5 felonies, and I walked out of there with 1. I went to the Sandbar Rescue Mission, and I remember like LB, he's like the director of the rescue mission, came and picked me up from county jail. And I used to live on this road called El Sueño, which is like right next to the county jail. And LB's driving down the street, and like, he's taking me back to the Sandbar Rescue Mission. I remember having this fleeting thought, this moment where I wanted to be like, all right, LB, this is just far enough. Like, looking up El Sueño, thinking like that, you know I could walk up this road right here and get everything I need. But that was a turning point. That was a moment that I decided I want to give this thing a shot. I ended up going to the rescue mission. I had a girlfriend one thing at the rescue mission is you're not allowed to be in a relationship for the first like 9 months. And you know, typically the old Eric would have said, yeah, let's sneak around, let's do that, let's try to cheat the system as much as we can, let's see how much we can get away with here, you know, before I get in trouble. And something was changing in me, and I didn't, you know, I followed the rules. I took that suggestion. I got a sponsor the second day that I was there, and I started working the steps. And like, I am definitely not a perfect example of this program. But at this point in time, I'd never given the program a shot. And I started, at that point, I started working the program, and it started working for me. I started getting that relief, and things started happening. I ended up moving through that program. It was a 1-year program. I ended up graduating that program and then moving into a men's sober living home in town, and getting a job there at the men's sober living home as a cook. And life started getting better. I started being okay with Eric. I stopped hating this person that I was. I started, going through my inventory, and I thought that I was such a victim. I thought that the world was against me, and that I just was dealt a horrible hand. And I started realizing my part in it, and going through the fourth step and going through my amends, I started to realize like how selfish of an individual I was. Like, I hated people just because they were who they were. I just didn't like a lot of people, and I just was unhappy, and I ended up I am now currently still working at that men's sober living home. I'm the program manager at that place, and that place is amazing. It's given me the opportunity to live a life that is full. And at this point in time, I'm going back to school. I'm going back to school. I'm going to school to be a nurse. That's my ultimate goal. I've got one more semester before I get to go to nursing school. And I would have never had the courage to try to do this because, like, mind you, I said I'm a convicted felon. I have a grand theft on my record. And I got to go apply to the nursing board. And, like, before, I'd be like, yeah, there's no way they would ever take me. Do they know who I am? Like, and, today I can push through that fear and kind of walk forward and trust the process. Today, like May 1st of this year, so like coming up in a couple weeks, I'm going to get to go to court and go before a judge and see if they're going to expunge that felony for me in order for me to go to this nursing school that I've been working towards. And I got letters of recommendation from some pretty amazing people saying that, this man has been rehabilitated. And some of them are like they're important people. They're like judges and like doctors and stuff like that. That are like a pastor. I find it comical because like the person that's standing here before you today is not the same person that walked through these doors 4 years ago. The person that walked through those doors was someone that, a lot of people wouldn't want to hang out with. Even like the lower end of society was like, Eric, get out of here, because I was just too weird. It was just when you mix, when you stay up for a week and you're not afraid of the outside world, shit gets really weird. And I was way into headlamps too, and like brought in just some bad imaging. It gives me hope. It makes me smile. Like when people say like, Eric, you're a good person today. Like, this one girl I've been hanging out with is like, you're a good guy. And I'm like, hey, do you know who you're talking to? Oh my God, I am a good guy. Like, you're responsible. I was the biggest flake. I would steal from you and I would lie to your face. And like the old saying goes, I'll help you look for it. This program is real if you give it a chance and work in the steps, and has changed my life, and it's changed my whole perspective on it. It's not, drugs and alcohol aren't my solution today. My solution is prayer. And here's a great example is, I started getting a little heavy, a little overweight, and I was smoking cigarettes and my health was starting to decline. And I never thought that this body was going to have to live to be 30 years old. So I was like, well, wait, hold on. If we're going to be riding around in this car a little bit longer, we should probably change the oil and take care of it. So I started going to the doctor, and they told me I had like high cholesterol and pre-diabetic, and they said your lungs are shot and you need to stop smoking. And I ended up started to lose some weight. I was 280 pounds. I started losing weight, but the thing I couldn't stop was smoking, right? And I was like, went to my sponsor, I can't figure it out. Like, I tried like this, I tried that, I tried the nicotine patches, the gum. I can't stop smoking. Like, how can I quit speed and heroin and alcohol and benzos and glue and all that other shit? Like, how can I stop all of that but not stop smoking cigarettes, right? And he said, pray about it. And I was like, that's crazy. And so I did. I started praying about it every single night. I said, God, take this away from me. I don't need it in my life anymore. Please help me. Help me and relieve me of this obsession of smoking that cigarette. And every single morning I'd get up, I'd get my cup of coffee, and I'd be like, I'd light that cigarette, light it up. Every single morning and every single night I'd make the same prayer. And then one day, I go and I light the cigarette. I'm sitting there and I'm taking a drag of it, and I'm just like, that was it. I quit, and the 23rd of this month will be 6 months without a cigarette. That's just like an example of the power of this program. It doesn't just have to apply for drugs and alcohol. It applies to if I'm afraid to come and speak to you guys on a Sunday night, and I say a prayer. Please let me have the whatever to touch at least one person tonight and have my message work for somebody and have it come out where it makes sense. Because I'm not a public speaker, it's just, this program is absolutely amazing, and it made no sense to me when I got here. It still doesn't quite make sense why or how or, it works. I'm a science major, and I'm dealing with factual information and looking at the steps and trying to logically figure out why this works better than a pill or better than, than some other solution, and I can't outthink it. It's like when you go to the doctor and you don't understand the treatment for your disease, but you still take the antibiotics, even though you don't know how it works. And you see the results, and you see the results in other people. And, you know, my life's amazing today. Like, my family is back in my life. Another moment that I had in county jail was I was supposed to go to, like, my great-aunt's 80th birthday. And on her 80th birthday, I ended up in jail. And they all came to county jail, and they said, Eric, we're done. We're done with you. You know, don't call. Don't write. Don't come by for Christmas. You've ruined the last three, you know. And so we're done. You know, we're not going to bail you out. We're not going to pay your rent. Find your own way. And when you're, and I thought I lost the people that mattered the most in this world. And you know, after getting sober, they weren't super excited to you know, welcome me back, because I'd done it to them a couple times. And for the longest time, I thought it was like a victimless crime. I'm like, they don't understand. Like, I stay away. I never steal from you guys. Like, that's not true either, you know. But I, after being sober for a year and completing that program of the rescue mission, they started restoring faith in me. And like, now when my mom, you know, leaves the country, she's like, Eric, can you watch the house? I'm like, that. I'm like, wait. So you can drive my car. that faith of, you know, they see that I'm doing this thing, and that they see that, you know, I'm not, you know, trying to make a judge happy anymore. I've been off of felony probation. I'm no longer under. I still get drug tested at my house or where I work, but I'm no longer tested by probation. You know, that faith, you know, has been restored in me, and so. One last thing as I kind of wrap it up, because I don't know if I could fill another 15 minutes, and I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing me. But, you know, when my brother asked me, like, about heroin, like, why would I do it, I told him that it would give me something to look forward to when I woke up. And, you know, today, this program makes it so that I'm happy with me. And when I wake up, I don't need anything to look forward to be happy. I'm happy because, you know, my life is full and amazing, and I may not be the richest person. You know, I had to go and help my father move and pound in a big old stake into the ground in order to pay for gas to get up here. So I'm like, I am not like financially wealthy by any means, but like the wealth that I've gotten from this program, like the spiritual wealth or whatever you want to call it, that is more than I could have ever imagined. You know, the fact that I love the person that I am today, and the fact that people see me and they go, you know, or that, you know, when I assume when they talk about me when I'm not there, is that, you know, that I'm somewhat of a stand-up guy, and that they can depend on me, except for Roman back there. But
we don't care.
Yeah. But you know, it's like I make a commitment. I try my best to follow through with it. You know, And that was something that, yeah, I just couldn't do before. I was selfish and self-seeking to the core, and this person here now is a different person, and I'm happy and joyous and free. Thank you. Thank you.